Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hello, FinTech leaders. Excited today because we have Michael on the show. Michael is the CEO and founder of Bitlibex. Michael's had a really interesting business journey, part of the reason why we invited him today on the show. He's worked across many facets of business. He's worked in a finance capacity, a sales capacity, a trading capacity, and also been a board member. He's currently a board member at a couple of firms. So, extremely excited, Michael, to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for the invitation. It's very kind, and I hope everybody will like the show.
Cool. Let's kick off. And always at the beginning of my show, listeners will know that I like to give a bit of an inside track into you as a founder, CEO, so we get to understand you before we go into the heart of the conversation. So let's kick the show off today with you just giving us a bit of an understanding around what you wish you knew about your current role as a founder and CEO. You wish that your younger self had known before you embarked on this journey.
Well, I have been studying economics, finance, and business administration in my university. And I was reading quite many books about organizations and CEOs in these organizations, like Hewlett Packard, Apple, and many, many others. And I thought that the role of CEO is a purely management role, like when you delegate a lot of things to others, control how they do their tasks, and so on and so on. Probably in bigger organizations, it's done like that. But in my organization, in my current role as a CEO, we have quite a small team. It's a startup company. And what I didn't know about that is that you have to be involved in quite many different aspects and things which you even didn't ever think you will be involved in. For example, in my particular business, Bitlibex, we have options with leverage, and these options are priced according to a very complex formula. And I had to create this algorithm and risk management practices for our company. And as a result, in my company, only myself know quite well how this options formula works. And in the end of the day, I have to deal with so many tasks because many people don't understand. For example, many users don't understand. And they ask support, then support comes to me and asks some specific questions. So as a CEO, I thought that I will deal only with management tasks. But in the end of the day, I have to deal with everything. But that's also because I'm also a founder of the company. And the founder of the company is always thinking about the business wherever he is and whatever he's doing. So that's it. What I wish I did when I was younger, I would start doing business when I was younger, because business is done by people. And however many books you may read, still you have to get experience, and everything is based on people and on experience. And I just wish I started the business earlier and become an entrepreneur earlier, because I like to be an entrepreneur. And starting it earlier would give me much more advantage now when I'm doing business now. That's what I think.
And you mentioned people and experience. And it sounds like a core part of business, in your understanding, is relationships.
Yes, definitely.
And how have you gone about building out those relationships in business? What do you think are the two or three elements of relationship building that has helped you as a startup founder?
I would say that two main aspects are there, in my opinion. This is honesty. You have to be honest with people, and emotional intelligence. So you have to understand how to talk to each particular person, what to say, what not to say, because people are very fragile, and it's very easy to break relationship with people by just saying a couple of unnecessary words or some And this is very important because, in my opinion, it's every business, it's like a relationship with woman. You can have tens of relationships before, but every next relationship will be unique. So you may get a lot of experience, but each person is unique. And when there are many persons involved in one organization or something, it's even more difficult. Mm. So everything is about business, it's about the people. Mm. So if you can build and structure organization right, where people are glad to work and they like what they do and they are treated well and they feel that they are respected and so on, then I think that there are very good chances to build a good organization.
And you mentioned business is about the people, and if you structure it well, people will enjoy working in that environment. So I was wondering what you've done with LiveX to set up an environment that allows people to be fulfilled at work?
Well, when we started, actually, the core team, we have done another project before that. And then I have decided that I will work on BitLiveX, and I have attracted the first seed funding for the project. And the core team just moved from that project to this project. Mm-hmm. And that's how it started. At first, there were four people. Mm-hmm. Then we have understood that we need an important technical person inside the team because we are mainly making development on outstaffing basis. Mm-hmm. Then we need to find the chief marketing officer, mm-hmm. and so on. So if you ask, that's how I built the team. But some people, of course, changed. Somebody was fired and I had to hire new people. But our driving force is our end goal, I would say. This is something that we see in the future. We see how the company develops. And we have very good understanding, and it's a mutual understanding, which is mutually agreed, about what we would like to see in 2 or 3 years, for example. It's a very user-friendly platform with a lot of products, with a huge engagement, gamification, and so on. So I would say that the main driving force is our main idea that is mutually understood, and people believe that we can achieve it, the resources and with the team we already have.
And what is your mission at BitLiveX, and how have you then motivated your team to go on this journey with you?
Mission of BitLiveX is to, I would say that it is to make trading user-friendly and understandable for the majority of people, for people who are interested in it. Because I think that very big problem about trading is that it's very overcomplicated in terms of when people speak about it. And for example, look at trading platforms, the majority of trading platforms. A lot of graphics, a lot of different buy-sell orders, a lot of different moving things and so on. And if you are an experienced person and you just want to do some investing, to try yourself in trading, to see how it works, and you jump into such a platform, you don't understand a thing. And nobody educates you. And taking this huge lack of knowledge, not only in crypto, but also in financial market, gives a lot of people opportunities to take advantage of this lack of knowledge. And that's why financial market, unfortunately, is overfilled with different Ponzi schemes and scam projects and so on. So our mission would be to create a user-friendly platform that where people can understand what they're doing. And we are planning to do that, and we're doing that by educating people. Our next big step will be BitLiveX Academy, where we will educate people how to trade, how to take the risks responsibly, and so on. These are very important things. Because I, myself, I'm very passionate about trading, investing, and financial market. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a brilliant thing, and I would like people to, the more people to join to understand it. But people will not look at it if it looks very complicated, because people like things to be done very easily.
And why is educating people important for you guys?
Because we would like our end goal is to build a big company with big profit as a very pragmatic things at the end of the day for every business, right? In order to do that, we have to gain new users and we have to engage existing users. If you are educating people, if people trust you, so people start to do more things on your platform, spend more time on the platform, they understand that you are not just not taking money from them, that you are educating them, and they become like your students, I would say, in other words.
Yeah, yeah.
This just creates more engaging relationship with them, which we need for our end goal to have the more active users possible. Because in the end of the day, for example, if we decide to sell the company to a bigger player, for example, to be interested as an acquisition target, we need to have a lot of active users because such companies are being acquired by others only thanks to their user base, because there is not rocket science technology involved, which nobody can copy, I would say. But user base, and especially engaging user base, is a very important thing. And that's why social networks exist, communities exist, and so on.
And how, let's stay on the education thing for a second. How are you going about educating a novice, someone that's just entering into the world and is interested in trading, as opposed to maybe someone that has already been in retail for a bit, they've done a few things, but it's wanting to go to the next level? Is it different parts to your...
I can answer your question. Well, actually, this is a big challenge for our next step, which I said, BitLavex Academy. Here, we will have to think very deeply how to do it, as you asked. But at the moment, there are two main languages, I would say, that we are looking for new users in countries speaking in these languages. It's English and Spanish speaking. And in these two languages, we have our own call center. And when you register, you get a call from a person who is very confident in trading experience. And he starts to talk to you and he sees what level are you in. And based on that, he will educate you what to do on the platform, how to understand what kind of risk you are taking, and so on and so on. So this is how it's done now. But that's why we came to idea to create BitLavex Academy, because we understood that even though we took a very complex thing and we're trying to address it in a quite simple way, still there is a huge gap in understanding, and we decided that this gap should be filled with BitLavex Academy. Because in the end of the day, you will not be able to talk to every person who registered, because the majority of people will never pick up the phone, just by statistics. And you have to create and give another tools of how to educate them. Of course, we have a couple of videos where we show how to trade, how to deposit money, how to do this and that. But this is a very, very small part of what we're planning to do when we are BitLavex Academy. Mm-hmm. I mean, there we will have courses, seminars, webinars, and so on and so on.
And as you started out the business, as you've got it going, and obviously the academy is something that sort of for the future, I was wondering how you approached promoting your product to your audience so they were interested in it and also started using it.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, from a couple of previous projects that were recently done before BitLavex, I've got very valuable experience of working with influencers, mainly with YouTube bloggers. And I saw the results from influencer marketing, which were just amazing with some bloggers. And this was the first marketing tool we were using, YouTube bloggers. We were sending out a lot of emails trying to negotiate cooperation with... Firstly, we were sending these emails out to bloggers that are relevant to our topic, like investing, passive income, cryptocurrency, and so on and so on. Then we started to send these emails out to bloggers to more wide auditoriums, like lifestyle bloggers, vlogs, podcasts, and so on. And then, so step by step, we have been doing that, and we're still doing that, because it's a huge work to do, because the number of bloggers is huge. But to be honest, there are a couple of aspects that do not allow to scale up this marketing tool very substantially, because it's very, I would say, time-consuming work to outreach bloggers. Then, for example, you write to 100 bloggers, you get 15 replies, and in the end of the day, out of 100, you can negotiate between two or three maybe videos with two or three bloggers. But imagine how many emails you have to send out every day to be able to build up this process. And it might take, with some bloggers, it might take 1 week from first outreach to video. With some, it may take 2 or 3 months. And you never know. That's why it's very difficult to scale this up. And we started to work with traffic. So now we combine bloggers and traffic, and this is a very good combination, because bloggers, they give very good brand awareness, and actually it's very creative work with bloggers. If you find a good blogger, influencer on YouTube. And if you find a good format with him and you formulate a very concrete and very good message for his particular audience, the results can be amazing. Mm. If you miss something, if the message is not right for the audience, people don't understand it, you will get zero result. Mm. But if everything is done right, the results can be like thousands percent of return on one particular marketing campaign, but can be zero also. That's why, as I said, this process is very hard to scale up, but it should work always as a brand awareness thing. And also it gives new users, of course, new user acquisition, but still. So now we can combine work with influencers and work with traffic. And this combination works very good. But it requires a lot of investments in marketing, of course.
And you say work with traffic. I was wondering what you meant by traffic. Is that traffic through Google, or what exactly were you referring to?
Currently, we're working through affiliate partners. So with some, we share our income, for example. Some we're paying for cost per lead, for example. We're buying leads from a particular country. And they work very differently. In the majority of cases, we don't even know how they work because they're using their own funnels, Facebook, Google, everything else. Somebody may have a lot of their own traffic from their own website. So it really depends. I mean, I get new contacts daily about potential partners who are willing to work on traffic. To be honest, this market is very gray, and there is a lot of scam also because everybody wants prepayment. There have been several times when we did a prepayment and got nothing in return. So it's, again, a very, very shady thing, but unfortunately, in our particular case, it can be done only like this at this point, because we can do, of course, we can build our own media buying team, hire new people, for example, and start do our own media buying. But we don't have experience in that. Mm. And in the end of the day, money that we will spend for different experiments will be much more, and they will bring zero result. Whereas we can find affiliate partners who are doing different funnels, doing different things. And of course, we will overpay, but we will learn from them. And in a year or two, we will have our own media buying team in-house, which will do the same thing for our own home.
And how did you find that this was the right sort of initial marketing campaign to go on and sort of really invest in? What was the discovery process that led you down that path?
Well, to be honest, I found out about it from a friend of mine. They were doing the project, and we were just over the beer. We were discussing different marketing activities and so on, what can be done in United projects. And he said that they have recently tried YouTube blogger. They ordered review of their platform, and it boomed. Like, they had thousands of people registered on the platform like overnight. And I said, oh, okay, we have to try it also. And we have tried. And with many bloggers, I have seen quite a similar result. And I can understand this because, you know, for example, when you watch TV and you press on channel 1, channel 2, you know, there is some kind of channel and you may see advertisement on this channel. Mm. But on YouTube, you find what is interesting for you. You find, I don't know, tech bloggers. If you're a fisherman, you find fishing bloggers. I don't know who. Mm. On those channels and those channels that you watch, you trust them. So you trust people who are saying about giving you advice. For example, again, if you're a fisherman and you're looking for a fishing channel, watching fishing channel, and the guy says that this tool is great for fishing, I don't know, it's close to 100% that you will buy because you trust the guy. And this YouTube audience, they're built on loyalty and trust. Mm-hmm. And that's why when somebody recommends something to their audience, it has a huge effect. It can have a very huge effect. Again, bloggers are very different. Somebody requires that they will say, for example, this is sponsorship content, and the next minute is just your ad is being run. Mm. But some can do very native integrations. For example, our channel is about lifestyle blogger student from California. I don't know. And he makes a video about his passive income three streams during COVID, for example. Mm. And he says he has a flat, he's renting out, he got some money from there. And then he natively integrates BitLevex as an investment platform where he's making some money. For example, it's just an example. It can be, as I say, very creative work. With every blogger, you have to find a unique way how to approach his audience. If it's done right, then you will get a good result.
Okay, yeah. It's extremely interesting. And I guess at during this process of working with bloggers or YouTube influencers, you also, in a way, strengthening your place in the market, strengthening your brand in the market, because people are talking about you, people are then seeing you, and people are then coming towards you.
Yeah, definitely. In some countries, we have very, very good results in terms of registrations, especially in some in India, for example, in Philippines, we got some bloggers who gave extremely good results. In terms of registrations, again, but these guys don't have too much money to invest, unfortunately, but still they were interested in the project. So yes, it gives a lot of awareness. And that's what I'm saying, that this blogger market is also growing very fast. There are a lot of new bloggers working. And that's what you have to do all the time, and to keep this brand awareness going. Because also financial projects require trust, and this trust is being built by years. If you are a financial project, the company started a week ago, I doubt a lot of people will trust you much money. They will not just invest this much money. But that's why you have to keep the ball rolling with the bloggers all the time, and so that people understand that you exist, that everything is legit, and everything is good, and so on.
And as you build out this part of your company, at what point do you think you'll bring this knowledge in-house? You mentioned sort of over a year or two, you should find out that you've got the right skills. But do you have someone internally that's working directly with the bloggers, or is it yourself? How are you making certain that the knowledge transfer happens and takes place from sort of freelancer to internal knowledge and power?
Well, at first I was doing it myself because I considered it to be, I still consider it to be one of the main things to do. Because for me, there are three main things I'm thinking about BitLevels that take my mind, I would say. Yeah. This is, how do we get new users? How do we improve engagement for registered users? Yeah. And how do I attract more capital for scaling? These are three things I'm thinking of. And working with bloggers, it's the thing that actually brings us new users. And this is a very important thing. At first, I was doing it myself. But as I said, it's a very time-consuming thing. And I built the structure, how it should be done. I have written the outreach letters, the letters to follow up, and so on and so on. And I started to give it out to other employees also, to chief marketing officer and to junior marketing. And I'm also talking with bloggers right now myself also, but very little and with very big ones. For example, I find those where fail is not an option, I would say, where I would like to negotiate myself and I know what to expect. So where there is the biggest responsibility, I take it on myself. But when we have the list of, I don't know, 5,000 contacts, which we have to outreach, this is done by the team, by junior specialists, maybe. If the case is unusual, because usually, as I say, you send out to 100, you get 15 replies. Five of them is no. Five of them is tell me more. Five of them is this is my price. And you know exactly what you have to do in each particular case. But sometimes the cases are unusual and the offer can be unusual. And we discuss it just usually brainstorm what to offer, how to offer. Because many bloggers have many channels. There are bloggers who have 5, maybe 10 channels, for example. Yeah. And they offer bulk offers, combined offers, this on this channel. Besides that, they're also selling their other social media, for example, Instagram and Facebook. They can provide a bulk offer for all social media. And a lot of different things. So it's very, very customized. And as we're also flexible, that's why we try to negotiate with which particular blogger separately, mutually beneficial conditions.
And outside of sort of the blogging and YouTube world, I mean, how else do you create and distribute content that engages with your audience so they obviously are aware of you guys and what you offer?
Well, we have our own blog where we post a blog post every week. Yeah. It's quite a bit, and it's quite a big and deep on particular topic. It's between 2,000 and 3,000 words. So this is the content we create. You can see in BitLevels blog. So it's every week. Every week, we send out a newsletter to our users with hot news about cryptocurrency market over the last week. And also, on Fridays, we send some kind of promotion. Currently, for example, we are running a rather big Apple products giveaway because on Monday, we plan to add traditional assets to our platform, options on traditional assets, which are Tesla, Apple, Amazon, Pfizer, and also three indexes, S&P 500, Dow Jones, and Nasdaq. So there will be options with leverage on these assets. And to celebrate this new feature, we are making this Apple products giveaway. And actually, every week we are doing something. We are integrating with new partners. For example, we integrated a company called Changely for accepting payments in different cryptocurrencies. Because before that, we were accepting only Bitcoin because we have our own possibility to accept Bitcoin. But for other cryptocurrencies, we did not have. And we partnered with Changely. We did a mutual marketing campaign. For our users, we promoted Changely. Changely promoted BitLevex for their users. And, for example, recently we've done it also with IntezaBlock, maybe you know the company for blockchain analysis, and so on and so on. So we do a lot of different things. But new user acquisition mainly is done through traffic and through user bloggers. The rest, what you're saying about blog, PR, and so on, it's more of a reputation building thing, something like that. It's not for direct user acquisition. Yeah. But I agree that we have to work more on PR. Because in terms of PR, we haven't done much yet by now.
And, you know, so all these activities that you're mentioning, how do you make certain that you are ensuring that you're spending wisely and you're getting return of investment from these spend activities?
Well, it's quite simple. We have a tracking platform. It's called Affice. It's a software that allows you to create, for example, for every campaign, you can create a link which you contribute. And then through this software, you can see how many registration came, how many deposits came. And you can see a lot of different statistics in that. For example, I negotiate with blogger about review for $1,000, for example. Mm. I pay him $1,000. I give him the link. Mm. He distributes the link. And then we see the result. So approximately in 3 days, the result is more or less, I would say, clear. First day, it's not clear. 3 days, it's clear. And then it's like usually YouTube bloggers have, how it's in English? Well, not lifetime, but approximately 3 to 4 months, you will still get some traction from particular video. It also depends how often a blogger uploads the video. Right. For example, there are bloggers who upload the video every hour. Somebody uploads once per week. And it depends. But usually after 3 days, everything is more or less clear, if the blogger was good or not. And then we see how much money was deposited in the platform, and we compare and we see what is ROI of this investment.
And as you look at different parts and other parts of your business outside of sort of the PR, marketing, and sales side of things, how do you view leadership and how have you acquired the ability to lead a growing team?
Well, I see the leadership as the ability to address common goals to all the people and to motivate them to move towards these common goals. I would say this is the main thing as a leader should do. Mm-hmm. And I have recently seen a picture probably on LinkedIn, the difference between the leader and boss.
We've all seen it. It's on LinkedIn every week now.
Yeah, it was a very good picture. So people should love what they do, and they should be willing themselves to move further, and not you who is standing behind them and pushing them to move forward. That's how it should be done. So as I said, it should be done through this relationship building, through emotional intelligence, understanding of what is important for a person. And of course, it should be teamwork. And of course, the CEO and the leader should understand maybe even sometimes personal problem of people that might face, and also anyhow help to resolve them. Because whatever happens at home still can be reflected at work, if it's something negative, especially.
That's interesting point you bring up there, just, you know, bringing into the understanding your employee or your team, not just your employees, understanding your team and also understanding their situations. And, you know, as a leader in a growing company, how do you manage that? How do you manage your work-life balance and also the work-life balance of your team?
Well, I cannot manage work-life balance of my team. I can only help, but usually, what is help? Usually, just to listen to a person. Because if, of course, there are some direct involvement is needed in terms of, I don't know, money or something, if a person needs help, Of course, it's a very easy thing to do to help you. But when it's a mental problem, I don't know, personal, a person broke up with his wife, for example, or something, then he just wants to speak out and you just need to listen to him. Even though you might have tons of things that might be more important for business now, but how employee will be treated by you in this case is very important for a further relationship with him. And that's why sometimes it's just required to be listened. But for me personally, it's probably the most difficult thing because I am married and I have two daughters, 5 and 1 year old. And of course, they require much attention from me, attention and time. Mm-hmm. And it's a very difficult thing to do because I am very busy now. I am overfilled with different tasks and so on. And yes, I'm trying to find this balance. And sometimes I do this, sometimes I cannot do this, but I try to do it. But probably the most difficult part is when you are also a founder and CEO, as I said, that you leave and feel every aspect of being a CEO and founder. Like every positive and negative aspect that happens in your company, you feel by your skin. And this is the most difficult part. When you can do anything, I don't know, like on the beach on Saturday summer day, and you're still thinking about different things that happens in your company. And you think how to improve this and that, how to do this and that. And this is what takes your mind, not just something. In other words, it's difficult to be here now, as they say. Yeah. You know, I have recently seen a short YouTube video from one interview with Elon Musk when he was asked about how did he make his decision when he was running Tesla, SpaceX, and SolarCity at the same time. He had three companies. Mm-hmm. And those three companies have been in very bad shape. This is even before the first successful launch of SpaceX. And Tesla was financially, all the three companies were in very bad shape. And but he had some money left from his exit from PayPal, and he had to decide which company to invest into further to make it to survive, in other words. Mm-hmm. And he decided that he would invest in all three companies. Other entrepreneurs probably would invest in one and give this one a better chance to survive, mm-hmm. rather than invest in three and probably none of them will survive. Mm-hmm. But he said that he invested in all three, and actually all three of them survived. But I like his analogy, what he said. He said that when you're making a business and when you're a business owner, you treat business like your child, and you will not leave your child without food, won't you? So this is the same for company. Money funding is like food for child. So that's why you always think about your company not being run out of money. So that you could always feed it. In other words, it's just an analogy, but I like it very much. Because that's what you really feel when you're a business owner.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah, I totally agree with you. And it's a very good analogy that you bring up. And I guess part of being a business owner and part of sort of going down that path is also, you know, having to make decisions, whether they're easy decisions or tough decisions, strategic decisions. So it would be good. I mean, how have you approached making these decisions in your journey as a business owner, as an entrepreneur?
Well, it's you simply, when you scale up, when you grow as a company, the number of tasks, they grow all the time. And you simply have to prioritize what the tasks require your attention and what require less of your attention. Yeah. And you understand what should be done by yourself and you do it. And you understand what you can delegate, you delegate it. And of course, for me, it's quite difficult to delegate things, to be honest, because I myself have very high quality standards for work to be done. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking for these quality standards in other people, but it's very difficult to find. So you have to try to find a trade-off, what you can accept and what you cannot. And yes, you just have to prioritize the tasks and trust people and give them opportunity to take some decisions by themselves without your direct involvement in that. So you either have to trust people or you have to hire people whom you trust. It's one of the things.
And give them the ecosystem to learn and grow. I mean, in that part, how do you guys build up and train up people that are new team members that are coming into the business?
Well, I can tell you that being in a small team requires you to learn very fast, because in a small team, everybody brainstorms on important ideas together. Yeah. And in order to be able to brainstorm on each particular idea, it can be related to user engagement. It can be related to one specific UI thing on the platform, for example, yes? And a lot of different things. In order to be able to talk about this with the team, you have to understand what's going on. Otherwise, your opinion will not be treated well because you just don't understand the thing. And this is important. And to be honest, I have quite many people who are willing to work now in our company because, for example, especially my junior developers, because they know that they will learn a lot for 2-3 years working in a company like ours, yeah, rather than they will, for example, go to a huge giant like Accenture, for example. Yeah. And they will be a very small junior developer and they will not be given any important tasks. And this learning process will take them much more time rather than being a startup.
Yeah.
Of course, in startup has its own drawbacks because it's more risky to work in startup because it's like the corporation will probably exist for the next 10 years. Startup, you never know how long it will exist. So that's it.
You make some good points. And as you look towards the future, what factors are you considering and what questions are you asking yourself as you scale up and move forward?
Well, as I told you, three questions I'm thinking of constantly: how to get new users, how to engage users, and how to attract funds. That's three questions I'm thinking all the time. These are probably the questions because all the other questions arise from this question. For example, when I think about engagement, about gamification elements in our platform, what I'm willing to do. Again, it's connected to point number two, so how to improve engagement of users. So whatever other question is one of these questions, basically. So I was quite concerned about crypto stuff in general because this is legislation in every country is different, and I was concerned about how it will be approached by each particular country because I was afraid of having huge overhead costs and so on for structuring business in a way that I would be able to work in the majority of countries. But to be honest, I don't see any, maybe 5 years will pass and something, this will be more important. But I don't see any problems in this field. I thought that they will exist, but I don't see too much of them at the moment. And moreover, we are moving, as I said, from Monday, we're adding new assets. And we are moving from being a crypto company, which how we are treated right now on the market, to being just an investment platform. For example, I consider eToro investment platform as our main competitor because they are doing something that not all, but something they are doing is something we are also planning to do. I mean, this making it very user-friendly and very user-oriented, because they have very user-friendly platform and it's very easy to understand how to trade on their platform rather than, as I said, on this platform that exists for 20 years and so on.
Yeah, I hear you. And as a founder and entrepreneur, there's always a willingness to continue to learn and grow up and make certain you're at the forefront of changes. And in that vein, I mean, what book or podcast or YouTube channel or blog or newsletter have you recently read or are reading right now or listening to that you think would be useful for our listeners as they either embark or midway through their scaling journey?
I would recommend one book which I'm currently reading, and I'm actually reading it for the third time already. It's a book by Peter Thiel called 0 to 1. And it's a book about, in a couple of words, about that there are actually two stages of every innovation, if to say. 0 to 1 is when you create something completely new and you move from 0 to 1. And from 1 to infinity is when something already exists and you just improve it and improve it, make it look better or something like that. And technologies that are 0 to 1, they have possibility to become billionaire companies, like companies who are valued in billions. I mean, to create a technology which will be a paradigm shift or something. And if you think about if, for example, if you're in an investment fund and you have, I don't know, X amount to invest, and if you invest in 10 companies that are working in status of being 0 to 1, I would say that even if one company is successful, then you will be a successful fund. Because there is almost no competition and so on. But okay, read the book. I advise to read this book. It's a very good book, and it will give insight to everybody, his own insights, I think.
Awesome. Yeah, that's that sounds like a good one to read. And listen, before we wrap up, how can people get in touch with you, maybe also get access to the platform and the team at BitLiveX?
Well, people can get in touch with me on LinkedIn, for example, or I don't know if you share any other information, like contact information, I can share something else. But regarding BitLiveX, the registration is open for everybody, so you can open an account and see. If you are from English-speaking or from Spanish-speaking country, I promise you will receive a call who will help you to understand what's going on there and will help you to open your first trades on it and so on.
Cool. Okay, mate. It's been an incredible show. I've really enjoyed listening to some of the insights that you shared with us in and around growing your team, leading your team, and also some of the cool marketing campaigns that you've embarked on as you go on and grow your company. So thanks for taking the time. It's been amazing. Great show.
Thank you, Richard, very much for the invitation. Good luck, everybody.